church to be a place which helps you to find and to keep your balance, a place which nourishes you and inspires you to lead a loving life of service, integrity, and joy. I want to extend a special welcome to those of you who are here visiting us for the first time or are still coming to know our church. After the service, please join us in our parish hall for refreshments and coffee, fellowship and conversation. You will there be able to enjoy our bookstall and stop by the information tables. Our children's and adult libraries are both open after every service and available to you, and those libraries are located on the second floor of the Elliott Wing. If you are interested in learning more about becoming a member at Unity Church, please visit the welcome table in the parish hall. I'd also like to draw your attention to the blue insert in your order of worship. This week at Unity serves as a guide and a roadmap for you to deepen your involvement in the church life. Our Wellspring Wednesday program begins again this Wednesday. Dinner is at 6 o'clock, a short worship service is at 6:50, and then classes begin at 7:15. Our featured guest speaker this Wednesday is Jim Lane, a professor at McAllister and a well-respected authority on India. It should be a wonderful presentation, and I encourage you to come. I have a brief announcement from Carrie Meyer, our Director of Religious Education, who has, in the last couple of years, absolutely transformed the religious education experience of this church for our beloved children. She writes that this morning there are 28 children upstairs in the chapel who are still waiting for the Unity adult who will become their journey guide for the next 15 Sundays. What this means, where we are at this point in the church's life, is a growing religious education program that needs one of you, or two of you, or three of you, to step forward and say, this could be a part of my spiritual deepening, this could be a part of my spiritual journey to help these children on Sunday morning. And you can still come to worship as well. If you're interested in this, please see me or particularly talk to Carrie Meyer, and she will give you more information. Next Sunday, Teresa and I will be leading the service entitled Beloved Community. Our services are at 9, 11, and 4:30. And after the service today, the congregation will give Rob and Jan a wonderful sabbatical send-off in the parish hall. You are all invited to that celebration. Following the services, rather than greet you at the Portland Avenue doors, we will greet you in the parish hall at the reception, and we hope you will be there. Again, welcome to Unity Church.
come to the threshold, come to be together, time out of time. Let word and song and silence lead you down into the deep and empty place. Then let the love that rises here take hold and keep with one another and your God the promises you've made. Come, let us worship together.
Every Sunday when we gather for worship, we pause for a few moments to expand the caring ministry of this congregation. Together, we recognize the cycle of life and death, the circle of love, compassion, and witness that permeates this sacred place. One of the ways we do this is by lifting up the names of people who we would like to bring into the sacred embrace of this gathered community. We hold in our prayers all those who live with grief over the loss of a loved one. We especially hold in our prayers Lee and Deb Helgen, their sons Evan and Luke, and the rest of their extended family as they grieve over the untimely death of Lee's brother, Kurt Helgen, who died due to suicide over the holidays. We hold in our thoughts those people facing their death with courage and dignity, those people recovering from recent illnesses, injuries, surgeries, and health problems. We especially hold in our prayers Katie Brevard, who is facing surgery this Tuesday for endometrial cancer. We hold in our prayers all those people struggling with addictions, depression, and other ailments of the heart and mind. And lastly, we celebrate with Jillian Lawrence and Dan Oakst, who were married here in the sanctuary this past Friday night. And we hold in our prayers all those around the globe suffering from poverty of spirit, of possibility, those whose lives are filled with the uncertainty due to violence, hardship, and war. May we all live to see a day when our lives are filled with peace and the promise of abiding freedom. I now invite you to share the names of those people you would like to celebrate, memorialize, or bring into the embrace of this caring community. For the names which have been spoken, and the names which remain in the silent sanctuary of our hearts, may we be forever grateful for this tapestry we weave together. And now will you join with me in a moment of prayer and meditation. O Eternal Spirit, Spirit of life and love, that which animates all that is, we approach you from all over the globe, speaking many languages, but we all speak the same words. As we ask to be called to that which is most high, to be called to our best selves, to remind ourselves once again the gift of life that we have been given. In this sacred hour, may we have the courage to touch those places which are most tender in our lives. May we not turn away from that tenderness, but know that it is a source of strength and wisdom. It is a source of mercy, love, and compassion. And may the face of our own tenderness be a face that joins the universal effort to move beyond fear and be a face of love in all that we do and all that we are. Amen.
Thank you.
For those of you who are new to this service, each year we acknowledge public figures who have died in the past year before we acknowledge the losses specific to this congregation. And I begin with a brief eulogy of Ann Richards, whose feisty Texas twang and witty comments and bouffant halo of her hair catapulted her to national prominence after the 1988 Democratic Convention. She was funny, hardworking, and she was unforgettable. She was a housewife who then became involved in local politics, moved from local politics to state politics, and became the first and only female governor of the state of Texas. Ann Richards.
I lift up the name of Steve Irwin, known to many of you as the Crocodile Hunter, an iconically Australian figure who often was rumored to have died in his wrestling with various animals and lizards, was pierced through the heart by a stingray, September 4th of 2006. He launched his career in 1992 with Crocodile Hunter, and through that show shared his love of adventure, the environment, and our natural world with all of us.
Born the youngest of 15, child of a tenant farmer, nourished in the Rondo community here in St. Paul. For a time, he rode the rails as a Pullman porter, one day picking up a discarded copy of Life magazine and realizing, as he saw the photographs of Dorothea Lange, that a camera could make a difference in the world, that a photograph could inspire people to change. It was the beginning of a long and rich and transforming life, Gordon Parks.
Two countries, 8 decades, one anthropologist, Clifford Geertz. Dr. Geertz was a distinguished cultural anthropologist who died this year at the age of 80. His prolific work focused on interpreting symbols, which he believed provide meaning and order to people's lives. He did extensive field work in Indonesia and Morocco and drew on history, philosophy, psychology, and literary criticism. And similarly, his work extended into all sorts of fields and arguably to generations of scholars. His writing was captivating, and as a student, I was always thrilled to find him on my reading list. His work broadened our understanding of the world and of ourselves. We bid farewell to one of the major intellectual figures of the 20th century.
Thank you.
This week, Rob and I will be leaving for our sabbatical. But we want to formally acknowledge that Justin Schroeder and Teresa Schwartz will become your sabbatical ministers in our absence. We commend them to you. They care deeply for you. They care deeply for our faith tradition. They have much to offer you.
And these people, they will not let you fail. Your ministry is their ministry, and they know it. Love them, even when you don't like them.
But I love them really well.
Help them to love each other and to that which is larger than all of us. Bow down. Denny Miller would like to share a few words from the board.
The Board of Trustees looks forward to working with our new, our temporary lead ministers, Teresa and Justin. And we, as was previously mentioned, we're hosting a reception for Jan and Rob as they prepare for their sabbatical. So please join us in the parish hall after the service. The table has been set up so that you will have the opportunity to write them a short note to wish them well. Thank you.
Yeah, Denny, we are planning on coming back. Which seeks to provide services to new residents here in the state of Minnesota. They offer classes, English classes, and they seek to help people learn what it is to be a Minnesotan, of which I am proud to name myself. Will the ushers please come forward? I wish those classes had been around when we moved here.
Thank you.
Octavia Butler was an African-American woman who got involved in the world of science fiction writing, a world that is generally dominated by white males. And she made a mark by writing brilliant stories that spoke to issues of race and power. Her best known work, Kindred, is a story of time traveling from the late 1990s into antebellum South. It's a brilliant piece of work. Octavia Butler.
This feminist crusader and author whose searing first book, The Feminine Mystique, ignited the contemporary women's movement in 1963. The Feminine Mystique, with its impassioned yet clear-eyed analysis of the issues that affected women's lives in the decades after World War II, is widely regarded as one of the most influential nonfiction books of the 20th century. At the time of this book's publication, the author said, "Some people think I'm saying, women of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your man," she told Life magazine in 63. "It's not true. You have nothing to lose but your vacuum cleaners." Betty Friedan.
Born the child of great wealth on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, heir to the Sloan furniture fortune, he chose another path, became a Presbyterian minister, served as the chaplain at Yale before becoming minister of Riverside Church in New York, and began being one of the most articulate spokespersons for peace and racial justice of the 20th century. He once confronted me after the ministers of our movement had recited my litany on atonement, in which we say, "I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love." He confronted me in an elevator, saying, "Brother Isaacs, what makes you think you can forgive yourself or me? We know whose job that is." A child of wealth who spoke of God as exercising a preferential option for the poor, William Sloan Coffin.
"2006 saw the loss of a tireless advocate for racial peace and nonviolent social change, Coretta Scott King. Mrs. King rose from poverty picking cotton in Alabama to become an international symbol of the civil rights revolution alongside her husband, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Dr. King's assassination left her alone with four small children, but Mrs. King continued their critical work. From demanding that the promise to obey her husband be removed from her wedding vows, to serving on the board for the National Organization for Women, Mrs. King advocated for women's rights throughout her life. Coretta Scott King led the effort for a national holiday in Dr. King's honor and founded the Martin Luther King Jr. Center for Nonviolent Social Change in Atlanta. She was a persevering advocate for social and political issues, including the struggle against apartheid in South Africa. Coretta Scott King was a beloved woman of tremendous spiritual depth, courage, and strength. In her 78 years, she made her mark on our country, our conscience, and our hearts."
Thank you.
finally allow the beloved to see and know her exactly as she is. Worship invites us into what anthropologist Victor Turner called liminal time. Worship asks us to step out of time as we usually experience it and stand instead at the threshold between the past and the future, to set aside all urgency and duty, to let go of our worries and our plans, and to come as best we can into the present moment. The tolling of bells each year asks us to strip away the conceits of particularity, to lift back the veil of denial, and so to recognize ourselves and one another in light of our mortality. The service is particularly poignant this year as Jan and I prepare to leave for our sabbatical. It seems a bit pretentious to draw parallels between our planned departure and the finality of death, but each in its way calls us to step across a threshold. Each asks us to take stock and to bow to the past. Each invites us into a future likely to be quite different from what we've known before. Eliot, in his Journey of the Magi, has the king who tells the tale wonder, were we led all that way for birth or for death? There was a birth, certainly. We had evidence, and no doubt. I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. Without denying for a moment the depth of gratitude we feel at both the privilege of your call and the gift of this long-anticipated time away, we need you to know that our leaving will be bittersweet for us. The bonds of love for you, and for this place have grown strong in us these past 6.5 years. We're going to miss you. But we also know the benefits not only to Jan and to me, but also to the congregation as well, will far outweigh the sense of loss. It's easy to fall into the delusion that ministers are indispensable. May Sartre says, memory makes kings and queens of us. We are not indispensable. The French have a wonderful saying, the cemeteries, they say, are full of indispensable people. It's also easy for people to fall into a kind of low-grade idolatry, to make the mistake of equating the church with its ministers, or worse yet, to defer to us as though the role endows us with some superhuman qualities. It doesn't. Jean Piaget wrote that the path to maturity begins when one first understands that one is not the center of the universe. He calls it intellectual uncentering. I don't believe it happens all at once. In religious terms, we're talking about cultivating the awareness that there is a power in the universe far larger than ourselves, a power before which we bow down, a power far beyond our naming or our knowing. Worship helps us to align our lives with that power. Scripture suggests that such a time should be set aside each week. We call it the Sabbath. It then goes further to require that every so often we should let the land lie fallow, that we should step away from our routines and obligations so as to reassess and to enrich our lives. That's what sabbaticals are for. It's also what can happen when we grieve well, when we take the time we need for love and mourning. Did someone say that there would be an end? An end? Oh, an end to love and mourning? May Sartan asks and answers her own question. Dark into light, light into darkness spin, when all the birds have flown to some real haven. We who find shelter in the warmth within listen and feel new cherished, new forgiven. As the lost human voices speak through us and blend our complex love, our mourning without end. These threshold moments ask us to consider and renew the promises we make. Let's take a moment to revisit the concept of covenant. The covenantal question is, what shall we promise one another and in what interest? A covenant is not a contract. It's a statement of aspiration. I hope, I plan, I intend, I vow, I promise. We promise to remember you when we're away, to hold you in our hearts even as we let go of the day-to-day detailed compassion we always strive for here at home. Jan and I also promise to renew the vows we've made to each other, to lift back the veil, to see each other whole and holy, unencumbered by our busyness and duty, knowing that the strength and health of our relationship is central to our ministry and to the well-being of the church. And we promise that we'll take the risk of really letting go, because we know your ministry is even stronger than you know, even stronger than you can imagine. We make these promises in the interest of enlisting the source of love and life in renewing, encouraging, and strengthening us all. May I suggest you ask yourselves what promises you might make as we stand together here at the threshold of this new and blessed year. May it be so, and amen.
Fog covers the massive and obvious, as well as the subtle and the delicate. Driving and walking in thick fog is a lesson in faith. One, that the objects that are not visible are actually indeed still there, and that you can move through space almost blind. Of course, one can have too much faith and not enough common sense or doubt, and that's when accidents tend to occur. Faith is the belief in things unseen, and unlike traveling in the fog, things don't often get clear when the light burns it away, but rather when we see with a different kind of vision. About a year ago, a woman named Glenisha LaShawn Moore came to was in her early 30s, and she had just been given the diagnosis of terminal lung cancer. She was reeling from the news and realized that she needed a place to house her memorial service. She was directed to Unity by her therapist, who knew our work well and had actually been to a memorial service that we had conducted. She met with me to plan her service, and as we talked about her possible impending death, the issue of the quality of her life emerged, and it wasn't a surprise. It, of course, generally does. She wanted her last days to be as meaningful as possible, and she decided to do minor realignments in her life, and some actually not so minor, so that the life she did live better expressed her deeply held values. She reconciled with her family, and she began to attend this church. She got involved with the people of color group here at Unity, and she found new reasons to live, which made her want to live more. She used every tool at her disposal to fight her disease. And even through the struggles of her health condition and her treatment, she fell more deeply in love with life. Lived the life she wanted. She was at home here at Unity. She wanted a liberal religious community all of her life, and she didn't know we existed until her therapist told her about us. It was the right place for her. Now, years before, her conservative Baptist family had handled her coming out as a lesbian pretty well. But when they found out that she was planning on joining Unity Church, they couldn't handle it. They felt that she was turning her back on her Baptist heritage. You know, they're not Trinitarians, you know, her father raged. She kept coming. He tried again. They're not really Christians. They don't really believe in anything. None of them are saved. She replied, "Dad, they're my kind of Christians, and they do believe in things. Their beliefs are evident when you are with them. It is my religious home, and they are all saved." So when you wonder why you are here, why you stick with this imperfect religious community full of imperfect human beings, remember Glenisha. Remember my beloved Annie Keeler. Remember the people who come here because it is a good place to die. But more importantly, this is a good place to live. And this ministry is not about the professional ministers. It is your ministry to one another, to lift up a quality life. And what could be more important for a religious community than to be a place where people want to be as they are dying, and equally significantly, a place to help them live? The poet W.S. Merwin wrote for the anniversary of my death, "Every year without knowing it, I have passed the day when the last fires will wave to me and the silence will set out, tireless traveler, like the beam of the lightless star. Then I will no longer find myself in life as in a strange garment, surprised at earth and the love of one woman, and then the shamelessness of men as today, writing after 3 days of rain, hearing the wren sing and the falling cease, and bowing, not knowing to what." Every year, without knowing it, we live through the anniversaries of our dying day. Being part of a religious community is not a frivolous affair. We We are here to be the gentle hands that hold and bless new life. We are the ones that hold the hands of the dying. We are the ones who help give meaning to the dash between the dates of birth and the date of dying. There is nothing more significant. There is no ministry more powerful than the ministry you give to one another. You who have sat in that quadrant, sat next to Glenisha Moore, and you never knew her, but you were ministers unto her. You, as a community, teach about the dash. It is a significant ministry. We give meaning to people whose days are numbered. May we learn, as the psalmist encourages us, to number our days so that we might grow in wisdom and stature. And I add to that, so that we might grow in the sure knowledge of the power of our ministry with one another and to one another. May it be so.
Thank you.
the past year are invited to come up, speak their name, and light a candle of remembrance. If you will come down the side aisles and then go back to your seat in the center aisle, it will all work out. I would like to begin this by acknowledging the pastoral care team who work in partnership with your professional ministry to provide direct care to those in need. Members and friends of this congregation, will members of the pastoral care team who are present this morning please stand? These are people who are here for you, and we ask that you reach out to them, that you know them, and know that they are here for you as part of the ministry of Unity Church. Thank you.
Yet they live on in our longing to love. In our struggle for justice, they serve still.
We rage against the inevitability of death. We understand, but we are not resigned. Each loss diminishes us all.
Yet as we stand at the bedside, as we summon the strength to be there, we are embraced by an inexplicable
cousin Robin, and for my aunt Josephine Novi Duck.
To my sister-in-law Eleanor Barrett, and to very good friend Robert Beck.
For my aunt Grace, who died in May, and for my parents Kenneth and Jean, who died earlier.
For my mother Dorothy Kuska Kazelka Heidemann.
For our grandniece, Brianna Vitek, who was killed in a car accident a year ago next week.
And for our dear friends, Bob Feldman, Ruth and Bill Sirluga, and beloved Mary Beard.
For my brother, Harry Gregg.
For my husband, Kent Dickerman, a gentleman.
Jody Jane Hyman.
My mother, Nancy McClellan Merritt.
For my wife, Kitty Lou, who died January 27th.
For my mother-in-law, Maria Mappa.
my Scrabble nemesis and my friend Robin Bray.
For my father, Roger Grunman.
For my sister-in-law, Nancy Krupczak, who passed away last June, and for her widower, my brother, who is now battling cancer.
For my beloved teacher and mentor, Bill Schofield.
For our Aunt Margaret.
My beautiful grandmother, Hazel Olive Miller.
Mary Ann Mattoon, analyst extraordinaire, and for my friend Linda's mom, Mary Freeberg, who died yesterday, 10 days shy of her 98th birthday.
For my stepbrother, Mike Goth.
For my grandpa, Martin Lubeck.
For my Uncle Bob and my brother, Gene.
For my father, Gaylord Pete Schaefer.
For my uncle, Clarence Chan.
For my friend, Kim Grimes.
For a real Irish queen, my Aunt Mary, the oldest of 10 children, and my mother's first sister. For my friend Melody and Andy Francis.
For my teacher and friend Randall Kindley. Cousin Margaret, like a sister.
For my grandmother Elsie Walters.
For my wife Mary Baird, through 40 years, a guiding star for this old sailor.